Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perreault, and I'm so pleased to have back in the saddle with us again, Dr. Paula Stewart, Medical Officer of Health from the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Welcome back, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you.
It's been a couple of weeks since we spoke. Since then, no real new developments with you personally to speak of. Except for the fact that you announced that you will be retiring, of course.
Yes.
And we're gonna talk about that. We're gonna do a little bit of a retrospective here today. But before we get into that, wanted to just talk a little bit about the current situation when it comes to COVID-19 and the pandemic. Today we hit, you know, what the media always calls a grim milestone, with the 100th fatality since March 2020 related to COVID-19. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I know. We had about 30 from January until up till about 2 weeks ago, and it was quiet for a little bit. And I thought, okay, maybe there won't be any more deaths, because that is the tragic part of the COVID situation. And they're older people, most of the time we learn that they have underlying health conditions that just makes it so hard to cope with COVID. And it just, to me, every single time I look at one of these situations, I think that each one of us can be thinking about who in our lives could be in that situation, and what is it we could be doing about it. I'm really hoping that with Paxlovid, now that deaths are going to happen less often, and that's, and our primary care providers have been amazing about really getting on board with it, and we have lots of pharmacies, so we have some tools. That being said, older people get older and have conditions that affect them, so I hope you hold your older people that are in your life, hold them carefully in your heart.
Absolutely. Really interesting too, because here we are later in the pandemic and people are obviously easing restrictions, going without masks and so on. But yet I'm seeing more and more, even just on social media, I've had two people in the last, I'd say, 2 weeks who have written that they have lost loved ones due to COVID-19. All the way up until this point, I had had maybe four over the course of the entire pandemic, but this is like within the last couple of weeks, and it's really striking. The balance has shifted, wouldn't you say, as far as the reaction goes and what we're seeing people do?
Oh, it's really interesting. I get a glimpse into it, which is why the numbers are so important to me, because it gives me a sense about what's happening in the community. Mm-hmm. What I really hope is that people are living. I really hope that people are engaged in their life, thinking about what they want to do, appreciating opportunities to connect with people socially. I really hope that they're living, you know, that they're out and about and thinking about, from their own perspective or people around them, what are the precautions that make them feel comfortable and reduce the risk? I hope that people are rushing to get the fourth dose of the vaccine. We have many people who are. Like, the vaccine is just so important. I think if there's, I'm hoping the shift is that, okay, this is going to be with us. So how do I live? What are the things that are important to me? And how can I put the precautions in place that are important to me? So I don't know. This is why it's good for me to hear from you, actually, mm-hmm. in terms of, because you're probably way more connected to the community than I am from my position, you know.
I totally get that. I do. I love it, though, because it's like we have these two questions now that we have to ask. One is, how is what I'm going to do affect someone who's close to me? Yeah. We've talked about that in the past many times, you know, and okay, do I go to this gathering if I'm then going to be seeing an elderly parent or something like that? And we've been asking that question throughout, and now having this other question, how do I live? It's like, how do we, you said before, not living COVID or living with COVID, but living COVID adjacent.
Alongside, yeah.
Yeah.
Because really, infectious diseases have cycles. Measles has a cycle of 5 years. Like, that's what they do. And so And the coronavirus, which is sort of the parent of all the COVID-19, has been a regular virus during the winter. So I think we need to conceptually think that we're going to circle through perhaps another variant or something. That is going to be happening, and we're not going to run our lives based on what type of virus we have. Instead, base it on what I need to be doing and what precautions I can take. I think I hope that shift is happening. And I know that some people are incredibly anxious, and the anxiety is really difficult. And I think you make small steps in it. There's lots of resources on our website about people that are facing anxiety, deep breathing, like all of those things that will help you become slightly more adventuresome, and then more adventuresome as you think about what's important in your life.
I'm not going to ask you for numbers, but when it comes to vaccinations, I'll give you one number. And this is staggering when I read this in the report. 442,649 vaccinations have been administered in Leeds, Granville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Wow.
Can you believe that? And that's like in a year and 2 months or something.
That is just unbelievable.
It's so good. And we have 27% of our 80s now have their fourth dose. How cool is that? 18% of the 70s and 11 of the 60s. And we're still well up there. Like that group that I'm really concerned about. 86% of the 60s have their third dose. 93% of the 70s have their third dose. 87% of the 80s. Like it's really good. And all the people under that age group that are vaccinated are going to have a much easier time with the virus should they become infected. And I know that from personal experience in our family, not my personal experience, but experience in the families. And
My personal experience in there as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, other people around the station as well would feel the same way, you know, just incredibly grateful that we had these vaccines, because it could have been worse what we went through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's good. It's good.
Excellent. It's interesting because once we learned of your retirement, people would talk about how comforting these conversations that we would have would be, and just the demeanor and the way that you carry yourself when you're talking about such a serious topic was and is incredibly calming to people. It's comforting. I heard that and I thought, wow, what a compliment.
Yeah, that's I am deeply touched by that. Deeply touched by that.
I want to talk a little bit about you and public health. And in this way, we'll sort of take a look back a bit at your career and at your time here in Lanark, Leeds, and Granville. And one of the big questions that we always ask is why people do what they do. We have an election coming up, and one of the questions I ask every single candidate is, why are you doing this? It takes a special kind of person to do certain jobs, and I would certainly include yours in there. So tell us, why is public health so important to Dr. Paula Stewart?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I was 16, I decided I was going to be a doctor. I
used to really watch Dr. that young?
Oh, yeah, it was Dr. Kildare. Like, and the idea that you could be a smart person and you could use all that intellect, because I'm a smart person, that you could use that to help others, just like deeply appealed to me. So that was like, so that was the path I went on. And I did family medicine training because I loved the complexity of it. I loved the range of it, and did my family medicine training up here in Ottawa. And then I was going to be an academic family physician, and then had a couple of babies and whatever. And then the first day I stepped foot in Ottawa Public Health in my final year of residency, I said, oh, this is where I belong. And it's been true. And I've had lots of different parts of my career doing lots of different things. But fundamentally, it's about meeting people where they are, and then helping them to make decisions so that they can get to a place that they'd like to be. For everyone, they don't want to be injured. They don't want to have chronic disease. They want to enjoy their life. And so to be able to be part of a whole community of people working in public health who were really about the people and helping them go where they wanted to go in terms of their health, was really what drove me. And what's really interesting is that, so that was my thing. It was very much a promoting health kind of thing. And how can I help? And then when I was in my residency and sort of just finishing up in 1986, the Ottawa Charter on Health Promotion came out, and it resonated with me in a huge way. I have a daughter with disabilities, and so very aware of the challenges she faces moving in the world and so on. And the Ottawa Charter on Health Promotion just sort of laid bare all the things I really wanted to do to help people. And so it was, it's an interesting, like you start one way and then things happen and then you go another way and then you land someplace and then documents happen that shape how public health is going and say, yeah, I fit.
It's really interesting. Yeah. And you're right. You fit. But the thing is about you too, is you not only fit, you listen and you really, you know, integrate yourself into the community so that you can not only listen, but understand. And that helps you really shape the direction that you take. How important has that been in your career?
Huge. And I'm honest to goodness, as a physician, someone comes into your office and then you ask them, how can I help? And then they describe what's happening and you listen and you work with them and understand the, out of all the things they're saying, what are the really critical things now? And then you work with them on a plan about how they can move from where they are now to somewhere else. Well, as a public health physician, I people aren't coming into my office. Well, people come into my office, but it's not like if you're a physician. So I have to rely on the people in the community telling me what's going on in their lives, what's important to them, what would they like help with, just like we've done on every single one of our interviews. And the surveillance data like that John does, that just like we talked about, the deaths, what does it tell us? What is the vaccine numbers? What does it tell us? That's, I've spent a large part of my career actually developing mechanisms and methods to actually understand what's happening in the community. Some of them are numbers, but also focus groups, also connecting with people, because I can't do my job without it. Like if I can't hear what the population is feeling, thinking, understanding, I'm blind. So that's that. And I developed databases and all sorts of things just so I could make sure that what I was doing was where people were at. It's fascinating to reflect on it.
Yeah, I bet it is. I bet it is, because as you're going through it, and I think a number of people can relate, as you're going through it, you don't realize just how complex and everything it is. It's just, that's the way you're doing things. And it's not until you reflect on it a little bit later on that you think, wow, that was pretty involved. But
yeah,
you get to look at the results and say, well, I guess I had to be that involved.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. One of the first things I did is help develop the perinatal database in the for the Ottawa and Kingston region, Eastern Ontario region. And that was because there was a ton of data in the hospital chart, but no one knew about it. And we had cesarean section rates, which varied hugely across the region. And simply by setting up a database where the hospitals would enter data into it, all of a sudden we could look at our community and see what was happening. And then you started to see discussions about, oh, well, we're doing this. Well, could we do this? And I helped to set up a database with First Nations communities about breastfeeding. And once you have that data that tells you what's happening, then you can talk to people about, well, how can we help? So, yeah, so that's been a really driving force, is the listening to people. And how can we do that in conversation? How can we do that with data that we've collected on people?
Very interesting. When you sort of look now at your time with the health unit, I'm sure that there have been some public programs that have come in your time that you're really proud of and that have been important to you. Maybe you could talk to us a little bit about some of those.
Yeah. You know, and I was thinking, it's interesting to cast back over your life, isn't it? You know, one of the most important things is that province had a program called Healthy Community Partnership that had started in 2010 when I came to the health unit. And so that fit right in with my ethos, right? Healthy Community Partnership, healthy, good, community good and partnership. And worked with Lois Dewey, who was a public health nurse at the time. And we had a whole group of people. We had boards of education. We had healthcare providers. We had like just a whole group of people. We had community organizations. And we held this huge meeting at Camp Marywood. So that was my first introduction to what Lanark, Lees, and Grenville was like. Mm. I loved it. We had 100 people, ideas just floating like crazy, and we had money. So we hired a graphic artist to, while people were talking about what does a healthy community mean to me, she was drawing that picture. And then there was a group at that actually took that drawing and made it into a hooked rug, which is up in the office in Smith Falls. And then Lois and I worked, we went around to all the municipalities, look at what we could be doing. That was a huge thing for me, because I thought, oh, this place is different. I like this place. And being able to, as you said, be with those people and to be part of it. And there are, like, the Rural Recreation Association came out of that, and well led by Richard Kidd, who's the Reeve of Beckwith. And so that municipalities come together and think about what can we do to promote recreation. And the food charter came out of that, and all the people working on access to healthy food and supporting farmers and stuff. So that really was great. Mm-hmm. Very proud of that. I think that the other thing is that came out of that was the Nature for Life program. And I will remember forever when I was driving down and heard on the radio about the importance of nature and about the research that was being done. I knew about that because I live on a farm, right? And I had a cottage on a lake. But to know that there was research about that and the importance for child development and the importance in building our immune system and helping us cope with life. And that program really, really resonated with people. And the early year centers are still doing that. Like, so I think that was, so you can see there was a whole bunch of stuff around then. I think that mental health, we have a lot of mental illness in our family. And so promoting mental health and thinking about how physical activity and being out in nature helps with mental health. I'm really, really proud of that work that we're doing and still doing. And then little things like the radon prevention, that we looked at the data for our community, found out that we had higher proportion of our homes that had radon, higher radon levels. It was like 19% or something. And then we collaborated with a community group up here, actually, and put on some sessions. And then we've done further work and got a grant from Health Canada to further that work. So that I'm really proud of that environmental work as well. And then the Lynart Planet Youth, which I know you know all about. Once mm-hmm. again, people coming together, data around substance use suicides that we had, using that data and learning from elsewhere and then bringing together in partnership all the people that are working on it. So it's just, you know, and I think about the substance use problems that we're really, really coming to the forefront now. And we applied for a grant to get a peer support worker, which has worked out really, really well. So it's like there are a whole bunch of things where we listen to the community, we try to do something a little bit innovative, a little bit different. And then the COVID response really is all of that all put together. So I have fantastic memories of the people I've worked with, the people in the health unit that have come along on a ride with me sometimes, and
yeah,
you know, and develop the ride with our partners as we went. It's pretty cool.
You know, as I look at how much time we have here, there is another topic that I do want to cover with you, but we may do it at another time. And that would be looking at how public health has changed over the years. And we can do that certainly in light of the fact that coming up in July is the 75th anniversary mm-hmm. of the health unit. So mm-hmm. If there's anything that you wanted to touch on in that subject right here today, I'd please ask you to do so. But I would like to talk to you a little bit more at length about that in one of our other appointments.
Yeah, let's do that, because I think it might be of interest to people to see uh-huh. how public health has evolved and really brought us to the point that of how we manage the COVID response. So yeah, no, I'd be delighted to come back again.
It's amazing. Just listening to what you're talking about right now, it sounds like when public health, when it started, you were fishing and you were casting a line into the water, and now you're throwing this wide net out there.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, it's so true. It's so the one thing I'll say is it started in the 1860s with John Snow in England. And there were a lot of people who were getting sick. And so he, like me, mapped it out to see where the people lived. And he found out that all the people who were getting sick were actually using one pump in London, England. So he removed the handle from the pump. That was the first public health intervention. And
wow.
We'll talk more about it.
Well, that's a great tease, I tell you.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah, there you
awesome.
Go.
Well, that we see you've picked up a few things about the radio industry over the past couple of years. No doubt
that's
about
good.
It. We have two questions for you now. doctor in our Ask Dr. Stewart. And if you would like to get a question in for Dr. Stewart, please send it to us before Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Just send it to info@lake88.ca. All right. We spend our winters in Largo, Florida, and regularly listen to Lake 88, especially when Dr. Paula is interviewed on Wednesday. As you may know, Florida's numbers were incredibly high because of Dr. Stewart's recommendations. We only socialized with one couple, all boosted and outside and distanced. Everywhere we went, we were masked and we sanitized constantly. The only people wearing masks in the grocery stores were the Canadians. We did go on a cruise to the Southern Caribbean. All the crew were masked, but again, only the Canadians were masked on board. All this to say that thanks to Dr. Stewart, we arrived home safely 3 weeks ago. By the way, Florida recorded 4,961 cases on the day this was sent. No real question here. Just thank you, Dr. Stewart, for keeping us safe. We will miss you. Wishing you a wonderful retirement.
How perfect. You know, just what I said, living, like they're living and they know the precautions. Like, how perfect. Thank you.
Thanks to the information, right? And that's the thing. Like we
and,
say.
And in a way that people can decide what it means to them and make the decision. Absolutely.
Exactly. And that's it. It's not, you're not preaching. You're giving the information and you're telling them, you know, this is how you can do this, this, or this. And they react accordingly.
Yeah. Fantastic. Oh, I love it. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
That's very, yeah, that was awesome to receive that. Question two, my mother-in-law is 87 and she said she heard from someone that have the COVID vaccine or that getting the COVID vaccine can cause memory loss. I've told her I've never heard of that, but she believes it is true. So she won't get the fourth booster. Can you help me out? And thank you and Lake 88 for the wonderful information. I haven't heard that one either.
I haven't heard anything about memory loss. And Public Health Ontario has on their website has a list of the various possible side effects. For sure, if you get COVID and you get what it's now being called sort of long COVID, it goes past the 3 weeks, then memory loss, confusion, fatigue, absolutely are long-term impacts of having COVID itself. So that the reason to get the vaccine is so you don't get COVID, don't get it seriously. The risk for getting long COVID is much higher if you're not vaccinated. So get the vaccine because that's going to make a difference.
Okay. And that's all we have. I did want to ask you just briefly though, just to get your reaction on news that, Moderna has now submitted its vaccine to Health Canada for approval in use of 6 months to 5 years. This is something that we've talked about quite often. How did you react to that news?
Yeah, really pleased. Let's see how it, the Pfizer, when they were doing it, the two doses didn't give enough of a benefit. And so I haven't seen the data yet for Moderna. That'll go to the National Advisory Committee on Immunization and we'll be able to see it. So it's encouraging. I think having having an option for parents who want to protect their children is really important. So let's wait and see.
Do you have a plan in place, like ready to roll out when you're given the green light?
So yes, so our we can expand and contract our clinics as needed. We're hoping that primary care may do more of the little ones because they're seeing them anyways, and they get regular vaccines. Like their kids are used to it in their setting. So we've got a fantastic group of primary care providers that we connect with. So it'll probably be a combination of coming to our clinic and primary care doing it. So we are ready to move. We expand and contract regularly.
There you go. So do I, but that's a different story. All right. Dr. Stewart, as always, it's a pleasure to speak with you. We look forward to our next conversation very much. And I'm not going to say congratulations yet because we still have you for a little while. So, but no, it's always nice to speak with you.
Okay. Same here. Really enjoy these conversations.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. There she goes. It's Dr. Paula Stewart, the Medical Officer of Health with the Leeds, Grenville and Lanark District Health Unit on this edition of In Focus. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and have a wonderful afternoon.